This podcast is brought to you by Shaw Business.
That's Bill. His small business has a ton of data that needs protecting. So how's he sleeping when a cyber attack could happen at any time?
Smart security.
Yeah, smart security from Shaw Business keeps his data safe behind an enterprise-grade firewall.
Auto updates.
Mm-hmm. It even keeps itself up to date to prevent the latest malware.
I love you too, Space Alien.
Yeah, let's leave him to it.
Smart security from Shaw Business. Leave data protection to us.
This is the Linda Steele Show on demand. Subscribe now on iTunes and listen weekdays 2 to 6 on 980 CKNW and on the Radio Player Canada app.
All right. Good afternoon to you. This is Vancouver Province columnist Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to fill in for Linda today on a day when the BC legislature still in a tizzy over the bombshells and revelations from Darrell Plekis, the crusading speaker of the legislature. He's getting set to speak up again. This guy just does not stop swinging the wrecking ball here. It's just one unbelievable bombshell after another. Now, tomorrow, Darrell Plekis will chair another meeting of that all-party committee of the legislature that, quote-unquote, manages your money over there. What will Plekis say tomorrow? Well, I got a pretty good idea today about what he's going to say. We'll talk about that on the show coming up. We got all that and lots more. But first, let's talk about the ICBC dumpster fire now. Now, yesterday in the provincial budget, we got an update on the continuing financial bleeding over at the Public Auto Insurance Corporation there. The losses at ICBC are unbelievable. This fiscal year, ICBC getting set to lose $1.1 billion. This is $3.2 million a day that ICBC is losing over there. This is incredible. During the show today, by the time we get to 6 o'clock, ICBC will lose, about another $500,000. I mean, it just doesn't end. Last year, they lost $1.3 billion. When is this dumpster fire going to get put out? Well, the government said yesterday, wait for it. They're going to stop the bleeding over there, and they're going to do it quick. The government in the budget yesterday said that at the end of the this next fiscal year, ICBC basically be breaking even. They are going to make $1 billion in annual losses disappear just like that. Now, how are they going to do it? Well, they're going to do it by limiting the amount of money that's paid out to victims of car crashes and bringing the hammer down on their lawyers. The lawyers in BC are spitting mad about it. Let me introduce you now to David R. Brooks. He's a personal injury lawyer on Vancouver Island. He's been following this issue very closely. David, thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, Mike.
I appreciate it a lot. Let's talk about ICBC losing all that money. Do you think, as a personal injury lawyer, just doing this every day, I mean, is there any way that you think this government can clean up these losses in a year? I mean, you know, they're going to go from losing over $1 billion a year to turning it around in just one year?
Well, in my mind, Mike, I think that the statements yesterday in the budget show clearly that the dumpster fire either doesn't exist or it's trumped up and is totally phony. They can't possibly turn it around that quickly for a lot of reasons.
Why do you figure it's phony?
Well, there's been no substantiation of ICBC's numbers. David Eby is simply accepting what they feed him and repeating it to the media. There's never been any proof of that. The actual audit that was done by the government when they came in, which I presume was to show how bad it really was, showed a deficit of only $287 million. And then all of a sudden, people started lighting their hair on fire about that. And they thought this is a pretty good thing, I think, and a way to introduce these drastic cuts to victims' rights in the province. So they increased the deficit up to what the present dollars are, and sure enough, they justified bringing through these changes on it. But the fact that they say they can erase it in a year, I think, is incredible, to say the least.
Well, are you saying that, what, you're saying that ICBC's lying about how much money they're losing just so they can justify bringing in limits on victims?
Well, they certainly haven't shown any proof of these numbers. And in fact, if you read their financial statements, there's nothing in there that substantiates them either. So I don't know where they're coming from. They just seem to throw these numbers around liberally and hope that they stick. And if it's with anything else, if you repeat it enough times to the public, it starts to get accepted.
Well, I guess where they're coming from, David, is they say that the problem is you guys. You guys are the lawyers that represent people who are injured in auto accidents, and they're going after lawyers, especially what as it relates to what they call minor injuries, so soft tissue injury or cuts and contusions, that kind of thing. The government is saying, look, this is the Wild West out here for you guys. I mean, we're the last province in Canada that hasn't brought in some kind of restrictions or caps on that. So they say that they're going to bring in a cap starting April 1st, $5,500. That would be the maximum payout for pain and suffering for a minor injury. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, Mike, that's, we're the easiest targets in the world, really, aren't we? It's easy to blame the lawyers. But what Mr. Eby has said is that the lawyers have driven up claims costs, I believe his figure was 20%. That presupposes, on the other hand, that ICBC is paying those claims, and that's simply not true. ICBC doesn't just shovel out money when the lawyers demand it. It's ludicrous to say that. He's, in effect, blaming his own people at ICBC for shoveling money off the back of the truck, and it's in response to increased demands. So they're not paying those claims, even if there are increased demands. They're not paying those claims at the increased demands. ICBC never pays anything over what they think they can get a judge to order. And we, on the other hand, on behalf of our clients, don't settle for any less than we think a judge is going to order. But there's a ballpark there, and if we get into the ballpark, the claims generally settle. Well, ICBC's worked very well for many years. They've been profitable for many years. And this recent turn of events is really shocking, to say the least.
Okay, speaking of David R. Brooks, he's a personal injury lawyer. We're talking about these big reforms coming at ICBC there. I certainly don't blame the lawyers or a guy like yourself who goes to bat for your client. When you hire a lawyer, you expect them to do the best you can and get the most compensation you can for your client. I understand that. But you got to admit, though, I mean, isn't it true that we're the last province where it's the Wild West? It's wide open. These awards are unlimited compared to other provinces where they've brought in caps.
Well, no, the awards aren't unlimited at all, Mike. They're governed by what judges have awarded in trial with people with similar injuries. And pain and suffering damages were capped by the Supreme Court of Canada in the late 1970s at $100,000. That was the spastic quadriplegic on a respirator or the worst brain injury victim you could imagine got $100,000 for pain and suffering. The other aspects of the award are still open under Mr. Eby's caps, such as wage loss, cost of care, and that type of thing. But that was the cap. Now, with inflation, that cap's about $365,000, I believe, today.
Yeah,
injury. Everybody else is on that scale. And as far as the other jurisdictions, every other jurisdiction has a different system. There's three in Canada that have a no-fault system. That's Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Quebec. Other provinces have a system of caps or thresholds, sort of a deductible, if you will, like on your car damage. But the cap systems in every other province only include minor soft tissue injuries and abrasions and contusions. We're the only jurisdiction in Canada that has included brain injuries, concussions, whiplash-associated disorders in their total, chronic pain, all psychological and psychiatric injuries. These are all very, very serious injuries to the people who suffer from them, and Mr. Eby's lumped them all in there. No other jurisdiction in Canada has done that.
Let me ask you this one more question, David. One of the other big reforms coming from this government, and this is also kicking in on April 1st, is they want to move most of these cases out of the Supreme Court of British Columbia, move them into what are known as civil resolution tribunals, which right now are predominantly look at disputes involving condo owners and strata councils. Now they're suddenly going to be adjudicating auto accident victim claims. What do you think of that? I mean, if for someone who has been injured in a car crash, now their case is going to be heard in a civil tribunal instead of in front of a judge in a courtroom. What kind of impact does that have?
Well, it's a nice name for something that doesn't really help people. These hearings are all done online. They aren't an actual hearing before anybody. I believe there's only currently 8 members of the board of that. They're civil servants that have been appointed for a minimum of 2 years and a maximum of 4. They come under Mr. Eby's ministry. So the same ministry and minister that governs ICBC is responsible for appointing the people that are going to make decisions in ICBC's favor or the victim's favor. So it's not really a hearing. The other thing is this, is that the Civil Rights Resolution Tribunal is not, there's no independence from government like we have with our court system. And they've been given jurisdiction up to $50,000. Provincial court judges who have a wealth of experience in this area only have jurisdiction up to $35,000. It's just ridiculous to me that they would have more jurisdiction. They have no experience, no expertise, but under the legislation, they're deemed to have special expertise in this area. It's ridiculous to say that. So what you've got is a civil servant making a decision online by online submissions who's not independent of government, and they're going to have complete jurisdiction in this matter. There's no review to the courts. They have the complete jurisdiction to determine whether or not an injury is minor, and it's on the victim to prove that their injury isn't minor. It's a reverse onus, and it puts the burden on somebody who's injured to prove their way out of the system. It doesn't seem to work.
Okay. David, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you for listening to the Linda Steele Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you get your on-demand audio. And join the conversation. You can reach me on Twitter at Steele Talk, on Facebook, and by email, linda@cknw.com. Talk to you next time.